Well, Michael and I would like to welcome you back to another recording of the Saturn Earth Connection. Our website is helloearth.info, and today is Tuesday, July the 13th, 2010. This is our 138 with Michael from Maui, Hawaii. Michael was taken to a huge luminescent sphere near Saturn as a student visitor and returned to Maui with their flowing dialogue. Hello, Michael.
Hello, Curtis, and hello to everyone out there. Welcome back.
It's always good to have you call and know we're going to do a recording today.
Well, yeah, recordings that are... I just do some preparations. In other words, I align myself usually in terms of my heart and my mind. Spiritually attuned, and generally allow myself to simply flow, go with the flow of the spirit. You know, something that allowed you to get a little bit of more flow with you within yourself there, Curtis, so when I was visiting you.
Oh, you mean when you and your wife put energy into me?
Yeah, we call it. This has been around for a long time. Just simply touching you or laying our hands upon you, and then just allowing the flow of the spirit to move into you and renew you, recharge. Actually, it's not really a recharge. It's really allowing the river. It's really like a river, and you can feel the energy flow through you. Renewing energy. There's negative energies, which are horrible. But of course, did that energy feel horrible?
No, it didn't feel that at all.
The other way around?
It was the other way around. It was a nice experience, for sure.
Oh, okay. Yeah, and I noticed when I was leaving and said goodbye to you folks, you guys look about 10 years younger. So that's a nice thing that happens a lot of times. There's something that happens that lightens up a person's demeanor or even their outward appearance, their posture, their facial expression, all lightens up, and it seems like 10 years disappear off of people. I've seen that happen over and over again when I do this laying on of hands and infusing a person with the Holy Spirit, And then, and hopefully that continues to flow. But I've seen some people who just simply, through one thing or another, just allow that to stop. And then quickly things turn on them. And hopefully that, the celestials really are hurt, when you participate in this divine encounter and part of their being, and people turn their back on it. It's really hard, because then they see the devastation that happens a lot of times. Sometimes it's pretty serious.
Well, I hope they can hear me communicating with them.
Oh, much better. You should notice it a lot. You should also have different and more inspiring rounds of communication that begins to... grow in your life.
Well, I would look forward to short conversation or conversation with them.
Yeah. One thing I want to ask you, did you think Marcy looked younger by...
Oh, well, Marcy looks good.
She looks good.
Marcy looks good. She's been smiling, and which is usual, and you know, except it's hot. Beside that, it's hot.
Yeah, here. Besides the physical physical stuff really can, you know. That's one of the things that we are physical beings, and, you know, can get kind of squashed down under the load of our mortal weight. Mm-hmm. But it offers us tremendous privileges to, you know, create, move and have our being, along with this extra dimensional feature that we get via the Holy Spirit, and actually become one kind of being above the normal human being, you know, and actually a new being, and a new type of personality, because you've got an extra dimensional feature. It seems to grow. It grows. And what I saw around the world, especially in the Far East, were these seven levels that were just seemingly, you know, just placed in their temples. And they were there. Of course, they represent seven-dimensional growth or seven psychic circles of attainment. So divine attainment, psychic attainment, in which you grow yourself, you know. Being born as, you know, flesh and blood is only one level. You got, you know, seven more to move through, you know. So.
Mm-hmm.
And that what I introduced you to was something that you can begin to share, and not only or experience not only with yourself, but you begin to share with others. And it adds dimension.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have been putting up energy since then.
Yeah.
And I hope they hear me.
Well, yeah.
It's a long way to Saturn.
No, it's not.
No?
Not since I've been there. It wasn't a long way. It didn't seem like a long way. In fact, it seemed like a, you know, like a 24, you know, going to your home from Newark, Liberty Airport, that was a long haul, you know. It seemed like a lot longer than going to Saturn with Tan and Nell.
Oh, you mean in the car drive?
Yeah, in the car drive.
Car ride? Yeah, well.
Yeah, yeah. It seemed to have been a lot longer, as long as they allowed me first, of course, to see, like they did for my wife, and see the Earth, and then, you know, try to convince me that this was not a movie or some kind of recording. Past the moon and all of that. That took a while. It was actually, you know, I remember that taking, you know, minutes, a few minutes or more, taking quite a long time, actually. But as soon as everything went opaque and dark, you know, and then, boom, the next thing I see was Saturn. Mm-hmm. So that was a real quick movement. Later on, I got more into the understanding of what was being traversed. You know, it was a dimensional shift. So that's the simplicity of a simple ride to Saturn. You know, no bumps, no
acceleration,
turbulence at all.
And no acceleration, no feeling of movement.
No feeling of acceleration or anything. Oh. Yet, along with that, although it's a long way away, I come back with the understanding that much of what we have to attain must be attained in the body here on Earth, and through the imperfections in our society, as we make choices, as well as we get counsel and we seek truth, and we will find the truth because it's buried in us. It's always been there. There's no one that has been born into this world that has decided to think about what would be right and good that hasn't been given a divine fractal and to attune themselves to God. But then, you know, some people approach it from various, you know, directions. And ultimately, make, you know, strides in our movement as a society, moving, you know, on a higher level over and over again, higher and better. And looking at these ancient ruins of earlier civilizations, there are civilizations indeed, but they're, you know, we are far ahead of what they were.
Mm-hmm. Well, I thought I'd read a letter that was sent to me by Paul in Quebec City. He ordered The Coming of Tan, and this was back on the 17th of May, 2007. And I always ask people, oh, how do you hear about Riley? And he wrote back and he said, found it on the web by seeing images of Saturn and the object. So he reads about the book and then he decides to order a copy. It was 17th of May. And then he writes to me 11 days later. So it took a few days for the book to get there. But he writes back and he says, hi, Curtis. I mean, since Michael has been inspired by, I'll say, Riley's book, as far as, wow, you had like the same experience or similar. Paul writes and he says, hi, Curtis, I've read the book already. It's quite apparent that one needs to separate the message from the messenger. Riley Martin comes across as generally honest and humble, yet at times he reveals himself as judgmental and opinionated, and having his share of prejudices, probably rendering any relationship with him far from harmonious. That said, the truthfulness of the message shines through. Some of Tan's statements in the various dialogues are concise and very profound. Riley obviously started to write the manuscript a good number of years ago, well before the environmental concerns became so mainstream, if indeed they are now. And as a result, we see how true his ideas were concerning the environment. We are speeding towards an ecological disaster without a doubt, not to mention the civil unrest that will surely come of it. Then he continues, he says, whether we believe his story or not, he is right when he says that we are F-ED. I share his skepticism as to humankind's ability to turn things around, and I too feel that some pretty bad stuff is going to have to happen. I'll just have to hope that my loved ones and I will be among the 144,000 chosen ones. Like, that's going to happen. I better start buying solar panels or something. And then he ends with this line. He says, thanks for publishing this book. Riley was right when he said it would leave no one indifferent. And thank you, Paul, from Quebec. And I called Paul a week or so ago and asked him if I could read that. And he laughed and he goes, oh, well, I really can't think of what I wrote. And that was so long ago. And he's been listening to you since then, Michael.
So yeah, well, thank you for listening and continuing the act of insight. And one of the things is that there's so much out there that says that the celestials or aliens are from the devil or are the devil. And they are evil. And yet most of heaven or, you know, the celestials are on the opposite end of the spectrum. Mm-hmm. And are you know, infused with life and light, and some of that which we, you know, I shared with you, Curtis, and you can now share with others. It's easier when it comes through the hand, the touch, or the physical touch, and that you know, just passes along its way. So there's a little bit of responsibility there of having it. So as far as the story goes, it continues on. Those of you who don't know the story of Coming of Tan, the book, there's a lot of insight in there that shows a little more detail. Some of it, like Paul shows, is a little bit opinionated, but other parts are quite insightful. Much of what I gleaned from it was the parallels. In fact, later research realized that he indeed was the individual that I did meet there. So there's things going on that really has been orchestrated by the Celestials themselves, because so much of what there is about the Celestials has become vapor, essentially a spiritual vapor, intangible, something that you cannot touch, feel, or experience directly. Yet we now, if you were to again look at what we are seeing and observing with our technology presently, you know, such as Cassini and such as the stereo observer looking at the sun, we can see their intervention. We can see the New Jerusalem as a space station, or a, you know, a city in the sky, in a very small architectural world. Actually, it's a city, and one quite large and growing, and one having the capacity of many individuals who visit our solar system, and then of course make visits. There are also many ministers or servants there who serve, believe it or not, human beings who have made a choice to move and ascend on an ascending pathway, one in which gets closer and closer to divinity, or closer and closer to God, essentially. And they make their roles in our lives sometimes known, but most of the time keep it as secret as possible, because our development needs to be one of correct choices, and one in which we live and become and move and have our being in the reality of the divine web or the divine matrix, you might say. So in any case, that's much of what has happened. I've been receiving some information that lets me know that they are in observation and watching and doing, pressing us. Presently, the press right now is to get your affairs in order. Those things concerning our lives presently, so that, like Paul says, you know, if he feels pressed to get a solar panel and put it up, put it up, or whatever it is that is needed in this physical environment that we live, because apparently there is some stresses that will be coming upon our world. Now, I've just come back from Greece. Now, of course, we are well aware that Greece has some problems that are, you know, right now being worked out, and there's a lot of people that are in government or the running of public works that are unhappy, and they've shut down the public transportation and various things that have to do with these public employees, public servants. And when they stop doing anything, pretty much everything stops. And it's one of the things that we've got to be aware of is that when people stop serving, there's a lot of things that just stop working. Because we are the ones that make it work. Simple as that. And sometimes you need to be reminded. It's not the banking system. It's not the financial system. It's people. And they're, as much as the bankers would like to say they're God, and they orchestrate the will of the people through finance, if the people stop working, nothing will continue to move, no matter how much money you can throw at things. And this is one of the things that the world's kind of awakened to.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, you saw it in Greece, I suppose.
Well, I saw some very disgruntled people there who,
oh, yeah.
You know, I went, the very first thing I did was, go through the, immigration things, with passports. So I put my passport through the window, and the guy was not even looking at me, not even looking anywhere, sort of like looks to the right, grabs the passport, flips a couple pages with one hand, looks at it, far away, grabs a stamp and then kind of stamps it, and then all in one hand, this guy's just, putting on a show of how disgruntled he is, and then he flips the passport at me, here, take it. It's like, I want to give you the greeting of coming to Greece with so you'd be fully exposed to how grouchy we are here. But, and if that, continues, one of the things I said about getting younger, in the flow of energy, spiritual energy, Holy Spirit moving to you, is the joy, in spite of all of, the fact that, things can go wrong, is to keep your joy, keep your happiness. But when you got to orchestrate or act toward the powers that be, they need to make that point. Anyway, it was well played out. And it continued as I bought my first train ticket. The guy sold me the train ticket, wasn't too happy either. And on it went. So,
I mean, he wasn't happy with people visiting his country?
Oh, no, not at all. The only people that were serving were the people who were actually, doing the tours or something like that, or selling you something over the counter. Mm-hmm. But the public servants basically were, the ones that say, they were very unhappy because that's where they were being robbed. And essentially have demonstrated that if they stop working, everything stops. And the operators that rely on the industry, like tourist industry or transportation, even getting to work and stuff, they were very, very unhappy because it all stops. And if it comes to a point where this whole world ends up that way, then everybody stops. And the way government wants to say is that if we continue to work and continue to do things, then everything continues to function. But apparently in Greece it was quite obvious that it didn't have that kind of power. The government didn't have that kind of power. The people still had it. They decided to get grouchy. and stop. Yeah, everything stopped. So the power is still obviously in the hands of the people here.
Well, the people are the lifeblood of the country.
Yeah. And I think that's one of the things that I was able to observe. As much as powers that be want to orchestrate the fact that they are in control, they have the power and all of that stuff, they really don't. It's all in the hands of the masses of the people. And again, I'm reminded about what Tan said. He said it's this, his work with us, with Riley Martin, with myself, wife, other people who have been taken with him. It's not about power. And it's not about control. And it's about them choosing us. Now we're choosing them. And it's because of that that we have been called up to a higher level. And we'll continue to be continually called up to that higher level while they watch. Because indeed, our civilization, even as it was once orchestrated by supposedly the gods, demigods, human beings, so having some kind of specialized training, we created civilization in its earlier stages, was nowhere near what we have today. Yet, all of the masses, maybe some of them don't realize that it's really in the hands of the people. Anyway, that's a little bit off my little soapbox of what I was observing.
Mm-hmm. Well, here's what Len wrote from Salt Lake City. He said, I just listened to July 6th broadcast. Thanks for presenting my questions. Michael's reply was very, very welcome and understood. Thanks. What an exciting time we live. I'm thinking very small percentage of population would be tuned in and have a heartfelt connection, but I do. Your work and Michael's shared experience and his teachings are very much appreciated. Thank you, Len. So it's nice to hear people's hearing you out there, Michael,
Well, it's the very reason I continue doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And remember, thank you, Lynn, for your comments. I appreciate it. But going back to early, times when we thought we were two or three podcasts and just leave it sit.
Mm-hmm.
And it's because of people's continual growth of the audience. And it's moving, into, the world that we've continued to do it because, and it's not only the audience side, it's the celestials themselves who have been involved with it. This is one of the most wonderful dimensional plays that I've seen, is that as much as they would love to communicate to every individual on a one-to-one level, just simply not possible. But what is possible is for this group participation through this talk that we do have and the sharing, because it doesn't necessarily mean that everything has to be in real-time conversation. But yet the message gets through both ways. And this is the most wonderful thing because in the early times of the prophets, God or First Source did not necessarily have himself involved with the affairs of one human being or more, or one group of or a tribe or a culture. Many times they were involved with celestial agents, people who were or are connected to various divine sons. And this is one of the things I discovered, which kind of threw me off, because I, you know, wanted to have this revelation of, you know, God. But then I realized, after being at the New Jerusalem, that all of these citizens of heaven or of the divine multidimensional holographic real government, civilization, or whatever you want to call it, or just simply say the kingdom of heaven, are really ambassadors of God himself. So they actually have a type of wonderful love, which is the most wonderful thing, and knowledge, as well as share truth. And then they have a way of, you know, shifting around between their expertise. There's some people who have expertise, and they would share it. So this is one of the interesting things that I discovered, and moving in that direction, I realized that it, you know, our interface with the celestials are much more than just only on a storybook level, you know, in between Holy Bible or, you know, any other written scripture, but on a real level, with being able to say that these are people at who are true citizens of heaven, and they are, through this program, making their contact, or making their relationship, or building that relationship with you, the audience out there, and you can also build it with them, although through the show on one level, as well as moving it on a more direct level, and then finding out the full spectrum. And I'm living with this, along with also, you know, having a lot of background in the religions of the world, as well as being ordained as a minister of the gospel of Jesus Christ, which is the gospel of the entire universe. And that is the wonderful magic of this show. So just continue in making your comments known. And I just am very, very appreciative of any of them that you make.
Yes, thank you. We have a comment from a new listener. He says, hi, Curtis, and hi, Michael. I've been downloading your podcast, and I have a question. In one of the early podcasts, Michael mentioned the seven psychic circles and discussed the concept that once you pass a certain circle, you obtain an observer of sorts, or someone watches over you, etc. I can't remember which podcast it was, but I'm sure I'll come across it eventually. Thank you, Curtis, and thank you, Michael. Signed, Tom. Well,
okay. Well, Tom, that's true. I just got through saying some of those things.
Mm-hmm.
And in terms of understanding the position of the New Jerusalem out there, as a station, an educational institution, a governmental outpost, a spiritual location, a temple, having some, you know, some aspects of all of that. The people there, there are people who are transdimensional or morancho, having both spiritual and physical characteristics, are in themselves getting some training there. No doubt in my mind that there's a lot of students there. But we, as people who have been, you know, essentially born from the physical, biologic source that is here on Earth, and become sentient beings, and also attain soul, and then build our soul, at one point become in need of special attention, more than group attention. And these personal guardians will find an individual and then select them. And it is something that we get because they choose to help us. And once this one chooses us, they stay with us. Not that we only have one celestial guardian of destiny that is given to us, but, you know, we have. I personally have a relationship with many who are outside of personal guardianship. My own personal guardian has a, right now, has had a many times a responsibility to make sure that I don't, you know, hurt myself and or get killed or things like that ahead of the time frame that is accounted for. They need to make sure that at least this part of the messages get through. When it, a lot of it has been done, but there's even more that will be taking place. But along with that, there's others who are looking at, you know, groups of people. The attaining of this level would be somewhat, if you were to count backwards from the outside going in, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, in the psychic circles of attainment, somewhere along the level of the inner group of three, you'll find yourself associated with a personal guardian angel. And they will be assigned, and you will know that they will stick with you for the entire time, because you have an important, you have a task, because you've attained certain levels of understanding, knowledge, and abilities that will require a certain responsibility to move within the realm of this world. I often wondered if I would have to return, or, you know, if it was part of this this ministry that I would do, to be, you know, moving back into the official realm of you know, like a church pastor or something like that. And not because I haven't had any invites. There's been numerous ones, and it just never was, you know, checked through as something that was what was needed to be done. And then I found out that this, what I'm doing right now, is what they wanted, and is what is a unique type of ministry, because it ties together so much of what is in the world, but sort of confused as far as the religions of the world are essentially all trying to be, you know, they all have a legacy of truth, and they're tied together with this same truth, but because of culture, because of tradition, they've become disassociated and sometimes even enemies. And this is a sad case. And what I've done is experienced being with the celestials themselves, and I'm saying celestials are various levels of reality in terms of who they were, up to beings of pure light and life, and actually being in a place which is called the secret place of the Most High, because the Most High observers were there, these two beings of light, the Veranda Deck observers, who are there in response, having a responsibility for a fallen world, a world which is essentially having no set point of celestial guidance. You know, in other words, this world has got freedom to do or to discover truth, and also to make huge mistakes. Yeah, I think we got a huge mistake in the Gulf right now, don't we?
Yes.
Anyway, it's something that our consciousness has become very aware of. I mean, it's not something we, you know, we're kind of in the back of our mind wondering what those oil guys are doing, but now we really know what they're doing. they weren't all knowing, you know, but they ventured into an area in which they went into that was a little too dangerous.
And what
it'll be interesting to see the solution.
And what about the celestial guidance with that?
As I said, the celestial guidance with that is just that it is not something that is going to become, you know, immediately destructive, such as thermonuclear war, you know, where we just blow each other up in a matter of minutes. This is something that we can take care of, but requires both, you know, this a certain level of activity that we and the whole world is watching need to take. And this is something that is almost like a, you know, being growing up and being responsible in terms of, you know, our corporate responsibility, not individual. And this is a level in which they want to see. It's not just that we operate as individuals with knowledge of God or knowledge of what to do is right. Our organizations must also function in that manner, or in a manner in which is able to do the right thing. And that's exactly where they're headed to do now, you know, to fix it up. It could have been like totally ridiculous. So, okay, so, you know, somebody else clean this up, and just, so we go bankrupt and just let everybody, you know, else clean this up.
Oh, it's turned into an impossibility. Impossible to clean that up.
Well, there's various options, but we'll see. And
well, I hope the Celestials will step in.
Well, there's interesting ways in which I've seen Celestials step in, and
yes,
that is through inspiration. And one of the interesting things is that much of what I said in about getting our affairs, because we are, you know, physical beings right now and born into this world, it requires our own physical effort. But inspiration sometimes, or the pressure, or pointing to, many times comes from the Celestials. And that pressure will bring about the result ultimately. And it doesn't necessarily have to become a political pressure. Sometimes it comes from the Celestials themselves, the pressure within, the pressures into the consciousness and the hearts, minds of those in activity to do.
Do you think if the Celestials would hear from your listeners to encourage them to step in and help this situation, to actually clean up the Gulf and stop this oil from entering the Gulf?
Well, it's entered the Gulf. It's the result of cleanup is, you know, there's some other areas in which the Celestials are concerned about, which is the insidious part. That is been made, you know, apparent to some people, but And I spoke about a little bit about it, but, you know, when you look at the different types of fumes that come out of crude oil, some of them are very toxic. And
poisonous.
Yeah, poisonous. And also can be condensed around water and things like that. And come down in forms of rain. And there's been some idea that there has been some of this carried inland and literally, you know.
It is damaging our air and our soil from what rains from the
living,
sky.
You know, the living plants, and the most important thing is that
everything alive in the Gulf was feeding a large portion of the United States that wanted seafood. A lot of seafood came out of the Gulf.
Yeah, so that's all, in, you know, being threatened, not with, you know, just temporary failure, but somewhat permanent. There's a point in which, you know, things will go backwards pretty bad and may not come back for years. Like I observed my own experience, you know, swimming around an old World War II tanker, Liberty ship, which is made out of concrete. It's wrecked on the island of Lanai. And along the shore, you do find these tar balls way up on the, you know, I guess pushed up there by storm waves long ago. And people would take these tar balls, you know, and they use them to, you know, make campfires that were more, you know, more powerful. I remember that. Oh, these things burn. You know, this little stone here burns. That's a stone? No, it's a tar ball. And it's so old that it, you know, you think it's a stone. But and there was some coal, but there was really, you know, really tar balls that are still there from World War II. But the breaches are white, and, you know, the fish are swimming around.
Well, the ship has been almost empty for decades, but probably still spewing oil.
No. I don't think there's any oil left in it, but there's a couple of areas where there's underground where some barges that once had been fuel oil barges that were sunk, and they're all the stuff is, you know, stuck in it. Of course, if you go to Pearl Harbor, you still see some of that bubbling out.
From the Missouri.
From the old, Arizona Memorial.
From the Arizona.
Yeah, still, it's sunk, but oil still comes out. But anyway,
yeah.
You know, there will definitely be long-term effects to this.
Well,
it will always be an imprint on our consciousness and our lives.
Well, we're calling out for any help at all, which includes your friends out near Saturn, the celestial beings. This is a beautiful planet, and it's just getting worse in that area. And whether life could ever come back to normal ever in that area is
questionable. Well, in the short term, I mean, that's what they look at us as, really short term. But, you know, we have an extremely resilient planet and resilient life.
It's just getting worse.
You know.
Well, I have a question for the Celestials. Let's see. I'd like to see what they think about our brains for reasoning. And I'll go back to when the crop circles first appeared, or when they were noticed, they were simply circles in the crops. However, it didn't take long before these simple symbols became complex messages or visions carved in the crops, or in other words, carved in our food. And the symbols have turned into binary coded messages. And what do the Celestials think of our reasoning to these messages?
initial state of the message is where, you know, just imprints, but much of them became factors of attracting our curiosity. And then, as, like I've been explaining, as we become more attuned, they will essentially send us the decoded information into our consciousness. It doesn't necessarily have to be some kind of doesn't have to be a code. It can be simply an impression. There have been times in which I personally have found that the impression that was given was allowed for a higher level of attunement. And what I mean by this a higher level of attunement is you almost get sent into another dimension. Presently, what we are being giving hints to is the newest crop circles are what look like three-dimensional, and they, you know, people play around with this three-dimensional stuff. But when you look at that, they've reduced this particular crop circle has been reduced into a more simplistic form so that more people can get the idea, which is a simple idea, is that we are moving into a dimensional shift, a dimensional shift of awareness and understanding and experience, one in which I help you shift into a little bit, but it'll move into even more. And I'm talking to you, Curtis, when I said that when I laid hands on you, I help you move you into that level of, or shift you into another level of experience and reality. And would you say that you are now, did you say that, you know, just answer this question honestly. Do you feel like you've been moved dimensionally into a higher realm?
It feels, I feel a bit different, I'll say. It's hard to pinpoint exactly how I feel or what it is, but it was a moving experience, and it was enjoyable to have passed through me. That's for sure. It was a nice experience.
Yes.
Hope to keep moving with it.
Mm-hmm. Well, okay. Well, that's part of it, you know. And then living in that is another part of it. That is sometimes the one in which we've got to be able to make our steps through, because sometimes what happens is that we want to remain in this place or, you know, this dimensional place, new dimensional place, because we think that's where we've been invited to, so that we should be there all the time. But it's actually like anything else. I mean, something that we are able to move in and out of. So there'll be times, of course, which you need to just move back to that place. And because you've been there, it's much easier to move back to that place, which is filled with peace and love and renewal, regeneration. So this, I guess, in a greater way, you know, one of the things that happened when Jesus Christ left this planet was he spoke of the Comforter that would come. He gave the Holy Spirit, or this energy that I shared with you, in a higher realm, more than the energy to press you into looking into more, you know, questioning more and looking for more truth and wondering about more things out there. Curiosity is the work with your mind It's what I opened you to was the actual relational, functional power that was invited into the world. It is right here. You just need to be able to recognize and continue the invite and continue to be flowing with and to allow to flow through you. And it will be a continual regenerating power in your life. And that was was such a high concern of the universe creator, Jesus Christ, or this universe, Michael of Lebanon, or whatever you want to say. He wanted it to be it was so important that that would happen because of how it would express our holographic citizenship. It would express it living and alive and not in a storybook form, but a living and alive relational reality. And what these new crop circles are showing is this dimensional shift will be coming more and more as a reminder that we are beings of a higher dimensional plane and that we should be making the shift or remembering about, at least looking at it, because these patterns are trying to tell us we are more than just, you know, mortal beings, but we're multidimensional. Yeah. And we need to stretch out in those ways. So initially, when it goes right down to crop circles, it's easy for me to understand where they were coming from. Attract the attention. Allow the energies of, you know, basic curiosities to flow, and then start sending the messages. And those that are attuned or acute have been acquired whatever necessary attunement would begin to gain, you know, the knowledge necessary. And right now, as I said, the newest ones that I've seen are bringing that reminder. It's more like a reminder than anything. We are multidimensional and need to live in that area. But not so much that we, you know, not functional in this world.
Well, the crop circles are certainly gorgeous and highly evolved and extremely dynamic.
You see the newest ones, like I said, the ones for this season.
I haven't seen them in the last couple of months. I know they come in the spring when the crops are in.
Well, the summer, it's pretty much now. So. Mm-hmm. And the newest ones that I've seen are reminders. Of course, they could be composed by human beings.
Some of them are
just too far out to be done that way.
That's right. You can pick out the ones that are out there done by human beings. And they're out there included in there. But the very precise ones, wow, they are just not done by human beings in the dark, that's for sure. And there was a fellow who was out in those crop circles I saw on a UFO. Oh, you know, pictures of UFOs. Anyway, this was a very small craft, looked like the size of maybe 30 inches across, less than a meter, and it was like the streak of blue light, and he took many pictures of crafts around the new crop circles. It's silly to even call them crop circles because they're just so magnificent, but that's the name they were christened with. And the Celestials are, somebody's putting them there. It certainly isn't human beings. It's not Doug and Dave.
You went the board and a rope and a
Yeah,
board.
a rope and a board. Well, that was believable when they were very simple, but now anybody who looks
Well,
at it.
yeah. Well, then there was the one in the sugarcane field with in the backyard, in my back when I was little.
Yeah.
And it was interesting that the Men in Black came. And again, I'm repeating some of the stories that I've told, but they're, you know, a mix. But they came, and my mother told them to come back when my dad was home, and he would give the permission to interview me because they wanted to talk to me, and she wasn't going to let them talk to me without, you know, my dad knowing about it. So when they finally got the permission, and my dad said, you know, he had, what do you want to ask, you know, my boy? Well, anyway, it all ended up being something very simple, which was, did you go out and play in the backyard where the backyard in the sugar cane field? And I said, no. But I didn't tell him the rest, which was that, you know, the nice people were all were there at night, and they came and talked to me and visited.
So. The nice people.
Yeah. Nice people. They, like, you know, when Nella basically, you know, reminded me, because I said, how do you know my name? You know, I said, Michael, don't be afraid. And I said, how do you know my name? Basically brought back remembrances of those visits. And I said, oh, yeah, you would know my name back if you knew me from back then.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's been a long time, so that. But that's the story. They were visiting me from when I was in the crib till about, you know, when I left. That we moved our the home when I was 4 years old, but to the home I'm presently in.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been going on for that long. So there's some preparations, I guess, they had to do with me. I don't know what they were, but ultimately, much of the story and much of what was going on was a path that was built upon. Even before I was born. There are some things that I haven't spoken about in this in these talks, and because they are something that maybe are not to be let out just yet. But they go back even that far.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll hear about that maybe next time.
Maybe.
Maybe.
Yeah.
All right, well, time to say aloha, Michael, and we'll see you next Tuesday, and hear you next Tuesday.
Okay.
And thank you. Okay, aloha, Michael.
Aloha.